Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 415 for comics originally released on July 22nd, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Cyborg number 1. This is a title that launched a month after all of the other post-convergence ones. I'm not entirely sure why, but you know, what the heck, it did. I've been following Cyborg's adventures since he was introduced in DC Comics Presents, that kind of kicked off the New Teen Titans run back in the 80s. I'm not going to say I've read every one of his appearances, but any that I haven't read, it's probably because I just don't know about them. I'm a huge New Teen Titans fan. He was a great character then. They've certainly pushed him to the forefront a lot more since then, a lot more with the New 52 even. And it's kind of about time he's gotten his own ongoing title. He's had a miniseries or two before, but I don't think he's ever had an ongoing.
Yeah, I remember there was quite a bit of outcry that seemed to grow and grow as time passed on the New 52, and he was really the only JLA member not represented with a solo book or two. And I remember that kind of being out there, and it never went away until now.
Well, and they got a great artist of Ivan Reis here. The writer, David Walker, I don't recognize his name, so I don't know if I've read stuff by him before or not. If so, his name hasn't really stuck with me, but he did a good job here. There were a couple of things here and there that just felt, I don't want to say wrong, I don't want to say off, but I still resonate more with the original Cyborg than this one. So his father being alive still feels a little strange to me, because his death was an early aspect of the New Teen Titans. It works great for him to be alive. I like the characterization of Solias, and the interaction between father and son there is a lot of fun. I did think that this issue could be kind of split into the two parts. You've got the main plot line and storyline with Cyborg going to Star Labs and saying, hey, things have changed for me. And then you've got the whole subplot thing, which is setting up the main threat of this opening arc. And kind of never do the two really touch in this issue at all.
Yeah, they're not cohesive at all. They're very split and disjointed and jarring transition, I felt, from one part of the story to the other.
Well, it was just, why are they telling us this other stuff? I mean, we know, because we're well-trained readers, that it'll be the villain of the piece. But in this issue, they don't really connect the two, which I thought was a shame.
No, and the story would have been fine with just focusing on who the character is, who his father is, what kind of changes are going on in his makeup, this kind of the stuff in the city and the demonstrations that are happening. That was all interesting. But the other stuff, the otherworldly stuff that'll come in later, just really didn't do anything to help this story. And it really just took you out of it. And it was unfortunate, because I thought there was some good stuff going on. And the art chief among them, very good art-wise. And there was a lot of good stuff going on in this book. And I just didn't get the bookend pieces.
Yeah, it was all set up, no real payoff in this this issue. And I'm kind of wondering if the second issue is going to be one where you could read it almost as if it were the first issue. Maybe you lose a little context, some of the characterization, but plot-wise, I'm wondering where they start there and if it's almost just like you hit the ground running and could have skipped this. Which is a shame, because I thought it was a good issue. I just, I want to see the plot lines merge. I want to see there be a point of connection between what all is going on. Because almost really there were three parts to this story. There's, again, the threat, which is itself contained subplot. You've got what's going on with Victor, and then you've got what's going on with his father and Dr. Morrow that are in the same room often with Cyborg, but, you know, as if they're off in their own little reality, because they're kind of ignoring him and stuff. And I loved how they played up that he's almost their science project versus his father's son.
Yeah, and it really hit home. They would talk at him, or not really to him, but around him, and he was right there in the room, but they would never address him. He was very much a subject to be discussed, and that was some good stuff. Mm-hmm. That was some good stuff there. And you wonder if we're going to get any more of that, or it's going to be all of the B plot going on from now on.
I think we're going to get more of it, but that's just supposition. I got nothing to base that on. It did feel low, like the main plot was all the characterization and a lot of very show don't tell type stuff. And the subplot was the all plot. Well, I mean, they showed some there too, but it was all set up. Whereas again, the fact that you can kind of split the scenes that way is not problematic, but a little frustrating. You know, it doesn't seem like a cohesive whole. But part of it is all these other people in the subplot, we just don't know those aliens. We don't have any reason to care about them. Whereas, you know, Victor Stone, member of the Justice League, we know all about him, plus his time in the New Teen Titans. Heck, some people may just know him from the Super Friends. That's enough. Sarah, who I assume is Sarah Charles from the New Teen Titans run and a New 52 version of her, she was well used here. We've got, you know, not just Victor's father, but this other professor, Professor Morrow, which I find very interesting, because I'm thinking that's T.O. Morrow, who, pre-New 52, was a Justice League villain. So there's a lot kind of going on being set up here. I just, for a first issue, particularly in this day and age, I think they need to come out of the gate stronger, more cohesive, and really sell us on that next issue. And again, I really enjoyed what they had here, but I can also see a lot of people saying it was good, but not feeling the need to come back.
Yeah, I think this would have been much stronger without that other plot line going on. And I feel it would have been a tighter story. It would have been a stronger debut. It would have given you more character to hold on to. It wouldn't have... All that stuff's still here, but it's broken up and scattered a little bit.
What would you do with those other pages?
Keep them for issue two?
Well, I mean, in this issue, if you put that into the next issue, what would you have expected to have been in here?
I think there's some mileage to be had with the protester that was kind of a cyborg 1.0.
Uh-huh.
I think there's some more mileage to be had with that character, and there was some unexplored territory with the dinner or the lunch that he was going to. I thought they could have explored that a little bit more. I think there was some stuff there that they could have expanded upon a tad instead of rushing off to the other plot line. But all that being said, I mean, that story is still here. And if you're a JLA fan, Justice League fan, and you want some more Cyborg, you won't be disappointed, I don't think. For me, it's a good comic. It's just a B minus.
I can see that. I can see that. Your point about the protesters kind of being there but not really getting enough of the limelight, it was a little unclear to me exactly what they were protesting and such, so I think you're right. They needed to build up a little more on that. For me, I think this shows a lot of promise. I think part of it is I really like Ivan Rice's art, so that helped a lot. I like the character.
Yeah, very strong.
For me, it was a solid B, but it was also a little light on the action and adventure I think some people might expect out of a title, you know, headlining a Justice Leaguer. So it's going to be interesting to see, does the audience react well? Because, I mean, Cyborg's got a strong following, I think, with the Justice League and, again, the New Teen Titans for older school fans. It could do really well for the number one. Does it stay that way on the subsequent issues or not? I don't know.
There was an introductory price for, at least through DCBS. I don't know if it's going to be through retail as well, but it was like $1 for this first issue.
I think it was actually 74 cents.
Yeah.
And certainly through DCBS, I love it when they do that. It makes it hard to turn something down. And the question then becomes, was this a strong enough issue that people who tried it out at that, would they be willing to stay with it at $2.99? And that's where I think they did a good job, but didn't kind of seal the deal, didn't knock it out of the park, didn't... It's not a slam dunk. Yeah, most of these people are going to come back. It's 50-50 at best. It's good, but was it good enough is the question. So I'm looking forward to finding out and where they go with the series after this. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Certainly.
This is part of the Battle World stuff for Secret Wars. It is Star-Lord and Kitty Pryde number one. This is written by Sam Humphries, with the art being done by Alti Firmansha.
I was going to say Alti Firmansaya, but you're probably
Firmansaya? Right. I don't know. I'm not even sure what part of the world that sort of a name would come from, but I liked the art. It's really solid stuff, did a great job. So with a name like that, I would hope it would stick out in my mind, but I apparently don't spend enough time looking at the credits sometimes.
I've never heard of that name before, so.
Yeah,
for whatever that's worth.
I think it's a new artist and a very promising one. This, of course, stars Star-Lord from the Guardians of the Galaxy and Kitty Pryde from the X-Men. Specifically, because we got to clarify these days with the Secret Wars stuff, it is the Star-Lord from the 616 Guardians of the Galaxy, the Peter Quill we all come to know and love, and it is the Kitty Pryde from the, presumably, the Ultimate Universe. That's what they say in the solicit, but honestly, it's not 100% clear here in the comic itself that that's the case, which frustrated me a little bit. We do have a few other characters, such as a Drax here that is from who knows where. We also have Peter Quill not only being a singer, but his backup band looking to be X-Force. It looks like Guido, Strong Guy, Polaris, and Wolfsbane for his band. And it's like, I don't know how or why he hooked up with them, but okay, we'll go with that. Doesn't really matter to the story. What did surprise me a little it doesn't matter within this issue at all, but it matters to me a little in the bigger picture, that at one point the Drax character is referring to Peter Quill as Swingin' Stevie Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, he's going under a name because he's afraid he's being hunted by Doom, Doom being a god in this world. That's kind of a big deal. The problem I have is over in Inhumans Adelin Rising, he's going by Peter Quill pretty clearly. Now, that's either a disconnect or his cover gets blown and that's after this, but it's not clear. I mean, on the one hand, not a big deal. Doesn't matter to either story. It pops me out of the story a little bit when I notice those things.
Is it the same battle world? Same part of battle world?
Absolutely. It is in the quiet room of this particular Black Bolt character.
Well, that's just dumb then.
It's certainly inconsistent. And I didn't check to see who edited this book versus who edited that book, but those are the sorts of things that when you've got an assistant editor, an editor, an executive editor, an editor-in-chief, and whatnot, somebody, I mean, hopefully would catch some of those things. Again, it's a disconnect, not a big deal, but to me, the bigger issue was not making it as clear which version of Kitty Pryde we've got here. Because, of course, the 616 version of Kitty Pryde was dating Star-Lord. So to have a different one here and how that plays out is part of the fun of Secret Wars, to be honest, of mixing and matching the characters like this. But a little bit more clearer storytelling would have been nice. And again, I'm enjoying a lot of what they're doing over here with Secret Wars. Haven't read all of it by any stretch of the imagination. Still well behind on my reading. But I thought this was a good story.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed what-if stories. I like them in small doses, not out of my entire universe. So I think this would stand out a lot stronger if there wasn't so many of these what-if type of stories happening simultaneously. But for what it is, the art's fine. The story's kind of interesting. I like the portrayal of Drax and the relationship there, and that he's totally different than he normally is. That was cool, and yeah, I thought the cover as a crooner was a cool twist and fun. So there's a lot of fun stuff in here, and the art's not bad, and it's a clever little what if story that in a sea of what if stories.
And that's a fair point. It's something that if it had just been, here's another issue of Guardians of the Galaxy or Legendary Star-Lord or whatever, and just boom, we get this pocket universe. It's a what if. Let's see what happens. That's one thing. But you're right. The fact that, you know, we've got, I don't even know how many books a week from Marvel right now that are doing variations on this. Let's mix and match characters from different versions of reality. It does cut down the uniqueness and that aspect of the title a bit.
Yeah, it's so difficult to rise above the clutter now for these guys. And some of these stories would be really fun if you were still getting your universe that you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you were getting these occasionally, they'd be really fun stories. But when it's that's all they are, it's harder to enjoy them as well for me. That being said, this was fun. The art was fine. And it's a B this time.
Really? That's a higher rating than I would have figured you would have given it from the way you were talking. Because I'm going with a B minus. Because I don't think it was as good as Cyborg. I think it was good, but it didn't have quite the characterization or quite the depth or whatever. What for you, since you gave it a higher rating than Cyborg, makes it better than...
Well, I've got to stop taking points off because it's a SWA title. I felt like I was unduly harsh last week just because it was part of an event. So I'm trying to be a little more, trying to push that aside as much as I can, to be as objective as I can,
mm-hmm.
and take the story on its merits. And I did enjoy the humor a lot more. I enjoyed the different characters a lot more and their interactions. And I did kind of care a little bit about what was coming up next with the whole running off to see Doom, her dragging him off. I think that'll be interesting. So I'm kind of looking forward to what happens.
It did end on a much stronger note of I can't wait to see what happens next. And that was something that I think Cyborg should have ended on a stronger note.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see that. I guess for me, the art, Ivan Rice, better artist, but again, it was, both of these are good. Neither of these are, oh my God, brilliant, you know, they should get every award out there type stuff, but they're also well above average. But I do think it's tough right now with the Marvel books, since there's so many things, I don't want to say telling the same story, but playing with the same themes and stuff in terms of the battle world and whatnot. It does make it a little hard to know, are we being a little harsh? Are we being fair? You know, that kind of stuff. So it's, yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to when both publishers kind of get back on the, I don't say the straight and narrow, but back right. to the regular universes and kind of get all that going again and get a little, get away from the kind of the gimmicks.
Yeah. I mean, I, one of the reasons I wanted to kind of step back and evaluate these a little more objectively and take my own preconceptions out of there is because they're not going away. I don't know how long Secret Wars is going on, but at least another couple of months. So we might have 6 to 8 more of these to review. So I need to really get on board.
Oh, easily. Cause it's an 8-issue series for Secret Wars. I believe it's coming out every other week or something like that. Maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've got a good couple of weeks, another 2 months, I think at least.
Yeah.
So
I need to get on the train.
Well, try to enjoy it as much as you can. And
exactly.
If you do, great. If you don't, that's a shame. But understandable. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Sure.
Infinite Loop number 4 from IDW. This is by... Oh, geez. I'm going to butcher this name, and I apologize.
Pierrick Collinet, maybe?
We'll go with that. And Elsa...
Charretier?
Charretier. Mm-hmm. We'll go with that. I'm behind on my reading. So I read number 3 right before number 4, and particularly with issue 3, this title is so clearly and absolutely not an all-ages comic.
No.
I mean, there's nudity, there's sex, there's...
But, you know, that's part of the problem is there's such a great message here that some of the readers that really might benefit from this really shouldn't be reading it.
Well...
Just because of the adultness of the content.
This is one that I picked up because of the time travel aspect.
Yeah.
And
so you got baited and switched?
Yeah. Because, I mean, there are aspects of this series that seem a little, not a little, they seem definitely gratuitous. And I was going to say not essential to the story, but I'm wrong in that. The relationship between Teddy and Anno is made very clear in a lot of ways other than the nudity, the sex, and all of this. Yep, they're in love. Got it. 6 Ways to Sunday, particularly in the 3rd issue. And while this is an interesting time travel story, it's not a time travel story. It's a story involving time travel. It's a story about same-sex relationships. And there's nothing wrong, right or wrong about doing stories about that, about the relationships, you know, whatever. I'm not casting any judgment, whatever, except for the fact that storytelling-wise, I feel I should be entertained first. And if you're going to preach at me, try to be a little subtle about it. And this is such a strong viewpoint in favor of same-sex relationships, which, if they're going to have a viewpoint, that's a good one to have, I think. I mean, let's be, you know, let people do whatever they want, fine. But I think that part of the story is overdone, and man, it seems to be the sole focus of the letter page. And that's what really, the more I thought about it, made it crystal clear in my mind that from the creative team's point of view, or at least somebody within there, that's what the story is about. The relationship of these two ladies. And the rest is all just set dressing and kind of there to be had, but not what the story is about.
But the first issue, if you can think back to the first issue, it wasn't like that.
Because they hadn't introduced both ladies.
Yeah, well, I think they did in the end.
Well, the last panel.
Yeah, but it was a really balanced story. It was really strong. But yeah, we didn't really know exactly what direction this was going. And then you're right, issue 2, 3, and 4 just pedal to the metal. It's a relationship comic. It's an equal rights comic. It's political. It has a not so subtle message woven throughout, but it's something that needs to be said, and I like the fact that you can use comic storytelling to have that viewpoint and show that viewpoint. I think that's cool.
I think it is good. I think they're telling the story well, and I respect that. But given the way that first issue was, it set certain expectations in my mind, as did the solicitations.
Yeah.
That this was going to be about time anomalies and cleaning that up, whatever. That's what they spend their time doing, but it's not what the story is truly about. And it's one of those things. You could take Teddy or you could take Anna, and if you were to take one of them and turn them into a male and just retell the story, it's plot-wise, it's the same story, but from the standpoint I'm getting, that I'm perceiving out of the creative team, that wasn't the story they were telling.
But wouldn't that have been a more interesting story to tell if this society didn't allow heterosexual couples and they were going to be damned, they were going to be together, male and female, whatever. And wouldn't that have been an interesting way to attack this?
Arguably, it would have been more effective.
It might have been more effective.
Because it would have put us in the mindset of...
Why don't we own a comic company, doggone it? We have great ideas every week.
I know. But if they'd gone that way, we would have been in the mindset of kind of the subversive, you know, of, mm-hmm. Well, of course it makes sense. Which is exactly what they want us to be thinking about same-sex relationships.
But it's way over the top.
Well, in issue 3... way over the top. Much less so in this issue, but it's one
and,
of those.
And to be fair, you would have expressed the same concerns had that been male, female, sex, gratuitous sex on the page.
Yeah.
You're not playing favorites here. I would not think. So yeah, it was incredibly gratuitous, and I'm not sure that it advanced the storyline the way they thought it would, unless I just missed the subtext, if there was any.
Well, it's. I was watching a YouTube video about it was one of the interviews the Nerdist did at Comic-Con about the new Electro Woman and Dinah-Girl series that's being redone, and you know that was a '70s property from Sid and Marty Krofft, and it's got to get updated. Times have changed. And one of the actresses was saying that, you know, it's not about us being women. And then proceeded to spend most of the rest of the interview talking about how they're women. And if it's not about that, why do you keep talking about that kind of a thing? Here, it's if it's not about the same-sex relationships, why do they keep harping on that? And using the Anno is an anomaly, a problem in the space-time continuum. It's just not natural. Lacks subtlety. And it again, I think it would have played better from a large audience that if it was male, female, like we were talking about there. But again, that's not the story they were telling. I just I've got no problem with the position they're putting forth about same-sex relationships being okay. The nudity, the sex, I think that was over the top and unneeded, and they could have told their story to a wider audience without that. But again, their right to do that, I wasn't offended by that. It's the lack of subtlety and, I don't want to say craftsmanship, because they're very talented creators and storytellers. They were just going with, I think, easy, very blatant ways of telling the story, and they didn't need to. Because again, I thought in issue 3, even if you took the sex scene out, they very much sold the relationship between those two characters.
Oh, yeah, they were in that house forever.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, going back down memory lane and sharing all that closeness and stuff. So yeah, it was really covered in a variety of ways. And then when they started introducing multiple Teddies across multiple timelines, and then trying to tie that back into the Revolutionary Force, I wasn't sure that I quite bought all the different versions and exactly what that was going towards. It got a little convoluted in that area, I felt.
I would agree with that. There was also one point where she was questioning if some of the things she was saying were other versions of her through the time stream, or if she was essentially, you know, hearing voices in her own head. And that didn't clarify the storytelling any.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's... And I actually thought it was a 4-issue miniseries, so I thought it was done.
No, 6.
And so, yeah, I'm so close to the end that I can't jump off now, but I don't... I'm fearful they're not going to stick the landing on this. It's I think it's having trouble with its own world building, and I'm not sure if they're going to be able to get out of this and really hit this home at the end. I hope so, but it doesn't seem to be going in that direction.
I share your concern there. I think there's a strong possibility that they'll really get that ending and knock it out of the park, but I think it's equally likely that it's just going to fumble a little between here and there and not really pull together at the end. I think they're telling a very interesting story, a big story, and they've got a lot they're trying to do, but I think they may have, I don't want to say overreached, but this is one where I really feel having an editor or a story coach or somebody to really help them hone the story and focus it a little better and push back in a few areas could have turned this into just a stellar miniseries. Whereas it's very good with some reservations here and there.
Yeah, and the letter page as soapbox is starting to become a bit of a trope in creator-owned comics. Not just soapbox, but you know, therapy session, and very much tell me your story. Let's not talk about the comics or anything. Let's not talk about the story, but let's just talk about your experiences in this plot, you know, and how it relates to this plot. They do this over in Sex Criminals. Matt Fraction's letter column is all about first times and things like that. B Planet, Kelly Sue DeConnick's, it's all very focused on feminism, and those are the type of letters that they print. It's really not about what I thought letter columns were supposed to be about, which is, hey, that issue I read was really great, and here's why, and
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. So I guess, I mean, to each his own, but it's starting to spread.
Well, I think if the letters page had not been about the issue, but had been about, and I don't mean the issue of the comic, but I mean the topic of the relationships and stuff. If it had not been about that, but it actually been about the story, the comic and what's going on there, my view on this, I think, would have been fairly different. I still would have had some issues with, okay, they've got the nudity, the sex. Did they need that? What did that add? But I think it was the letters page that really made me realize just how thin of a metaphor or allegory the anomalies and all that stuff were for this, and frankly, it weakened the story for me.
And it's very possible that it could be the creators are saying there aren't enough characters like us out there, are enough same-sex characters out there, and we're going to write one, and doggone it, there's not going to be any subtext about it, that we're going to tell our story because we're incredibly underrepresented in the medium. And maybe that's part of why it's so overt.
That's entirely possible. And, are the different facets of our culture and stuff adequately represented in comics? No, I would agree with that. Regardless of almost which one you would talk about, for that matter. But it's the lack of subtlety that really, like I said, just kind of frustrated me a little bit. I think these creators, if they had toned it down a little bit, would have had a stronger story. And that frustrates me because I'm here for the story. I'm not here for the politics.
Yeah, it's like the Watson and Holmes comic that we reviewed a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. I can't remember the creators' names off the top of my head, but it was good stuff. And if that was hijacked and no longer really a mystery story, but about being being black and living in that city, and it was overtly about that instead. You thought it was a reinterpretation of Sherlock, but you're getting more of a social commentary and a not subtle social commentary. And then that's what the letters pages became too, all about that experience and not about the mystery or the characters or the story at all. And see, so there's different ways to tell stories and, keep that subtext there, get your message woven through there. Just don't be so overt about it.
Well, and it's not like they've got to hide it either.
Mm-mm,
because no, I think Watson and Holmes had a lot about the inner city black experience or whatever. I think Ms. Marvel has a lot about kind of the Muslim American experience and stuff. And I'm enjoying those sorts of aspects. But when it seems like they're, beating me over the head with a 2x4 on this stuff.
And it hijacks the story.
Yeah, it gets in the way of the story.
Right.
I think that's something that all creators should take a second look at their work before they put it out there and just say, is this telling the story I want it to tell? The ironic thing is, I think in this case, if the writer and artist did that, there's a strong likelihood they would say, yep, it's exactly what we wanted. And I respect that. I just don't agree with that.
Yeah, this has kind of trended downward so far for me. I really enjoyed that first issue. Probably would have given that first issue a B+. That was really strong. I was excited about the direction it was going. And it kind of has lost and fell off the rails a little bit, lost a little bit. And I'm concerned about the direction it's going, whether it's going to tie up all those loose ends well. So I'm at a C-.
Really? I'm frankly debating between a B- and a C+. And I think it's frankly better than a C+, not as good as a B-.
We have nothing else.
We have nothing else is the problem. I'm going to go with a B- on this one. If I were reviewing
issue 3.
If it was 3, that one I think gets the C+ for the lack of subtlety in any way, shape, or form. Because it was just so... the story stopped so they could tell a sex scene. And, if I felt that was integral or crucial to the story or whatever, fine, I got no problem with that. Didn't feel that was the case. So I'm going to, like I said, B- on this one, C+ on the third. But I would kind of agree with your assessments on the first two by and large. And I'm increasingly curious and uncertain how well the story is going to wrap up for me. I'm hoping it does well, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm concerned as well.
Now, it's another one of those weeks where I still have just a ton of comics to be reading. I am below the 200 count on how far behind I am. I'm most of the way through the week of June 10th, but I have not read much of anything else from this week as I'm slowly trying to catch up. I think the next week or two may be lighter weeks on incoming stuff, and that certainly helps.
Anything stand out in those weeks?
No, not really. I'm reading some of the Batman stuff and some of that. It's like I'm still not... I mean, with Batman and Superman, I'm liking the storytelling. I'm liking the issues. I think these are really unfathomable stories for them to be telling, in my opinion. It's once again like DC is thinking the problem is Superman and Batman is Batman. If they just weren't that way, they would be cool. And I just fundamentally disagree with that. That having been said, while I think the person they put in the armor and stuff in Batman is just a completely mind-boggling choice, if you accept that premise, they're doing good stuff with it. Likewise with what's going on in Action Comics and stuff. If you take the premise as is, they're telling good stories based on that. I just don't think those were good places to start the story from. And I am getting annoyed every time Action Comics is referencing a Superman issue that's coming out a couple of weeks later. Well, if you want to understand this, go read that. It's like, I can't. It's not out. And I'm doing this while I'm behind. It's had time. So that's that. I'm trying to stay a little more current on a couple of things. Like I read Grayson this week, and that was a very interesting issue. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but that one could have some major ramifications, both inside that title and outside of it down the line. And yeah, so I'm way behind. I'm more behind on Marvel than DC because I tried to read through all the first issues of the new issues or new titles for the post-convergence stuff. So there's still a lot of the Secret Wars titles I just haven't even read the first issues of yet. But it's a little harder to keep those straight because they all kind of blur together after a while. It's like, oh, this is another alternate timeline X-Men sort of thing. Which, you know, is fine and good, but it like you said, it makes it hard for stuff to stand out from the crowd. It all kind of merges together.
Okay, so. Think about what was out in early June, so I can't help you.
Well, like I said, I'm trying to just get through the stuff as I have time, and you know, there's just a lot of some other stuff going on. You know, keeping the podcast going takes some time and whatnot. It's fun, but you know, I'm hoping to get caught up before too much longer. To me, the first major breakthrough would be getting to where I'm down to one box and I'm behind, not two short boxes. That's
Ed, when you normally come back from con, are you that far behind?
No. Normally, okay. I would be a box behind. But because of the cruise, because of some other stuff that was eating up my time before that.
So this may be the most behind you've ever been.
No, the most behind I've ever been. I was out of college. I had been traveling on business nonstop for a lengthy period of time. And I had at least three boxes of comics. I'm trying to remember if those were short or long boxes I was behind. But it was a staggering amount. So this is not the furthest I've been behind it. I can usually catch up on the stuff. It's just a matter of, you know, sitting down and doing the reading. And I read pretty fast. It's not a big deal. But, I just, again, haven't as much time to do that because with all the travel and stuff, it's like, okay, I've got to catch up on some episodes, do some other things that I've let slide, stuff like that. It's a tough problem to have. You were going to say.
When this episode airs, will it be still time to send clips in for the previous episode?
Absolutely. Thank you for reminding me. This one will go up on the 3rd of August, and the deadline is the morning of Saturday, August 8th, for the previews spotlight clips. Back on a normal schedule. I've already got my previews catalog. I do have my thing, do I? Yes. Yes, I do.
Did you get your previews already? I thought it came out tomorrow.
I have no idea. It's the one that has Batman and Robin Eternal on it. It's the right one. Actually, I know how that happened. They got them out early so they could have them at San Diego Comic-Con. Unfortunately, they were always out by the time I got to the Diamond booth.
Oh.
I think that's the one month since they're all going to kind of be there anyways. They tried to get a little ahead. I could be wrong on that, but I think that's what happened. But yeah, if people could send in their clips, post on the forum what they're going to send in clips on and stuff. There is a ton of new stuff from Marvel, bunch of number ones there, number of things over at DC, plus, I mean, just all the other publishers. It's a lot of the stuff that was announced at Comic-Con we're starting to see in the solicits. So I think there's plenty of things for people to pick. I think it's one of the easier months to pick than some of the other ones we've had. So
it'd be nice to see so many clips come in that you have to break it up into two episodes.
I've had to do that a time or two, but it has been a while.
Yeah, that's the challenge. Lay the gauntlet down.
It would be fun to have to do that at least, you know, once before the end of the year. And if that's this time or more times than once before the end of the year, that's cool too. I mean, to me, these things are all about helping people find the right comics for them. There are a lot of comics that there's so many comics and previews every month. It's dirt simple for something to slip past somebody's radar. And if it's, if I'd known about that, I would have gotten that. Or if it had been properly pitched to me sometimes. So, yeah, definitely that would be fun. You're going to send in clips this time?
Yes.
Awesome.
Or you can chastise me on the air.
I'd rather you just send clips in.
But yeah, let's do that.
If you'd like chastising, to each their own. I'm not judging. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, that'll do it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Batgirl Annual number 3 from DC, Thor's number 2 from Marvel, and Hacktivist Volume 2 number 1 from Boom Studios. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.